the Society of Aviation and Flight Educators, a fresh start or just a re-chroming of the old model. I'm Paul Platt, and this is Aero News. Welcome in to the Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. My guest today is Doug Stewart, who is, besides the 2004 National CFI of the Year, a spokesperson for the Society of Aviation and Flight Educators, and that acronym spells SAFE. This is a new group to represent the interests of flight instructors nationwide, and as many of you who follow the news know, is somewhat of a break off from the National Association of Flight Instructors, having gone through a phase called TBO-NAFI first. We're here to talk about the organization's first real meeting, which happened in Atlanta a couple weeks ago. Doug, thanks for taking some time out to talk to our listeners today.
Well, thank you very much for your calling me and allowing me to share our news and our growth with you.
Well, I haven't seen a whole lot on the website since your meeting in Atlanta. Tell us how that went and what happened.
Well, the meeting in Atlanta drew approximately 40 people. It was a long haul for a lot of folks. But we were able to announce at that point our official incorporation. We did incorporate in the state of Connecticut. We are moving ahead to get nonprofit status, and I guess we had been under the hopes or perhaps the delusion that we could be a 501c3 organization, and it is appearing actually that we'll have to be a 501c6. Some subtle differences, the main one being a C3 has to be a charitable organization, and we don't quite fall under that. But we're moving ahead with that. We were able to report to those at the meeting that we do now have a bank account, only $50 in it, but we do have a bank account, and we will soon be able to start collecting dues. We were able to report that we're forming the opportunity for members to join as charter members at four different levels of support. This not only allows a person to show their support for the organization in a financial way, but also give them some tax incentive to do that. Radek Vizierkowski, who has been really the driving force between the website and probably doing it all himself, Radek was able to report on our plans for building a library. The library is currently under construction. We do have some things to set up in it already. That's actually one of the big excitements for us, is to have an online resource for training materials, for syllabus or syllabi, I suppose I should say, for PowerPoint presentations, for all different types of media that will be accessible by and for the SAFE membership. It's a very exciting thing that we're very happy to be able to put together.
Okay, now when you talk about the library, is this, as I might imagine it from your description, where if I'm a CFI and I'm a member of SAFE, and I, for example, have a student who's just not getting it somehow from what they're seeing in, say, the Jeppesen textbook, that there might be some alternate ways to approach that topic and explain it a different way using materials in the library?
Exactly. That's one form of the library. Another form might be just in some training tips for an instructor who just, not necessarily to explain it to their client, but to gain another perhaps technique of teaching a similar thing. As so many instructors are becoming aware, we have to instruct to the way the client learns, not the way we have been taught. And so sometimes a new instructor might only know the way they've been taught and not know another way of presenting the exact same topic. So we hope to be able to have that. Some of the other things we're thinking about the library is, in one way, having it almost as a Napster type of file sharing library. And in that part of it, there won't really be any oversight, any editorial oversight by SAFE as to the quality of the material, merely an opportunity for someone to post, if they were a member of SAFE, to post some document that they might have that they want to share. We will then have another part of the library that is under peer review, so that the quality of those items will be of the absolute top-notch outstanding quality.
Okay, a couple of other things are on a list of things that we've really looked forward to in seeing how SAFE would turn out. One of them is your governance process. Where do you stand in assembling a board of directors?
Okay. We had put out an open nomination period, which closed back here a week ago, actually 2 weeks ago, and then the nominating committee whittled down from 31 nominees down to 18 finalists. Those 18 finalists have been notified, and they have 2 weeks to prepare a 250-word statement on why they would like to be a board member of SAFE and what their qualifications are. Then on March 23rd, these names will go out to the membership along with a little thumbnail photo of the finalist. And then the membership will have 2 weeks to vote on this. And our voting will be conducted by an independent third party so that there's no chance of there being any way that any of us could influence that vote. And we are looking now to be able to announce the final nine members of the board on April 6th.
Let's move on to the other thing, and that is some of the programs that you guys had hoped to do regarding peer review and credentialing. Any kind of ETA on when some of those will start to come up over the horizon?
I wish I could really give you a date. However, I think what you're referring to really is the Master Instructor Program. As I'm sure you're aware, there are some issues of intellectual property and who that really belongs to, and those issues are being worked out. However, I do know that the creators, the original creators are of the program, are moving ahead. They have formed an LLC and are moving ahead to put this program together and make it available to SAFE. I would like to be able to say that we will have it ready to go within a month to 2 months, and we are furthermore looking for FAA coming on board so that Master Instructor accreditation will qualify for instructor renewal.
All right. When we come back from the break, Doug, I want to talk about the state of the flight instruction industry in general, because I think that there's a growing consensus that there are things that need to be fixed and maybe some differences in whether they can or how they should. But I want you to talk a little bit about SAFE's perspective on that in a moment. My guest is Doug Stewart, who is the 2004 National CFI of the Year and spokesperson for the Society of Aviation and Flight Educators. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Remember what the future used to look like? The flying cars, the spaceports, the rocket packs and spandex outfits. That was some future, wasn't it? But hey, here's the real future. A Garmin WAS Navigator. It makes its own glide path out of GPS signals, so you can land IFR at thousands of airports with no ILS or other ground-based approach aids. Now that's a future you can believe in. Garmin WAS GPS. Follow the leader.
Diamond's DA-42 Twin Star is General Aviation's ultimate flying machine. Fly fast with the confidence of a twin for the cost of a single. Go direct over water or rugged terrain and cover great distances in the first and only piston aircraft with an advanced airframe, avionics, and engines. The DA-42 gives you options you've never had before, including the Garmin G1000 and no ice protection. Go where you want, when you want, fast and for less. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design for a number of reasons. Clarity Aloft headsets are known for the superior clarity of sound. They're lightweight but rugged enough to meet military specifications. Best of all, they boast better noise reduction than ANR in the speech frequencies that matter most to you. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
Welcome back to the Aero News special feature. Paul Plack here with Doug Stewart of the Society of Aviation and Flight Educators. And we're talking with Doug about SAFE's formation. We talked about the meeting in Atlanta a couple of weeks ago, some of the things to look for, milestones in formation of the organization. And Doug, I want to shift gears now and talk about the flight instruction profession in general. I don't I used to see a few lone voices in the wilderness on this, but it seems to be a growing consensus within the industry that if we're ever going to make some progress on a general aviation safety rate, which some of the large organizations like to point to as improving, but many people say has been stuck too long in a bad place, it's going to take some changes in the way flight instruction is conducted. What is coming out of SAFE on this topic at this point, and what is the feeling of the people who are involved in formation of this organization?
Well, I really have to say, Paul, that, you know, so much attention has been paid to the differences between SAFE and NAFI and the issues of the Master Instructor Program and whatnot. But the real truth of the matter is that the vast majority of the people who have been involved in the formation of SAFE have been kind of beating this drum for years. And we feel very strongly that flight instruction is in a really sorry state. And we're not only talking about a sorry state economically, but a sorry state in the tools and techniques that instructors have, that the really kind of low requirements that there are to become a flight instructor. There are many things that SAFE has been fighting for years. I know that several of us, as long ago as 2004 at a conference at UND, were up on a stage giving a presentation to a huge gathering of people saying flight instruction needs to be fixed. It's not going in the right direction. We need to change it. And SAFE is certainly behind that.
All right. Now, a lot of people who criticize the current process and maybe the antiquity of Part 61 point to the fact that most of the flight instruction tenets that we hold today date back to the period before World War II, when we were trying to get a whole bunch of young civilian guys ready to fly into battle, and that really not a lot has changed in the basic structure or expectations of flight instruction. What needs to change? Is there any consensus on that point?
I believe that there is consensus, Paul. You're absolutely right. So much of flight instruction that is still conducted today is predicated upon stick and rudder training, and that is all. And that does date back 30, 40, 50 years. However, we certainly recognize that the real cause in probably 80, 90% of our fatal accidents is poor pilot decision making. Unfortunately, our training hasn't focused on that. Now, the FAA did come up with a program known as FITS, which stood for FAA Industry Training Standards. They've kind of fought a hard battle in getting this accepted. And there perhaps are some flaws within the FITS, because although it teaches scenarios, those scenarios then become canned and become learned by rote again. And that's one of the problems that we have in instruction, is that so many instructors just teach to a rote level. Now, I will say, as an examiner, I'm considered to be a tough examiner, and I asked one of my instructors who sends people to me, why does everyone think I'm tough? I thought I was kind of easy. And he said, because you ask questions that make applicants think. And that's really where some of the fault of our instruction is right now. Instructors just teach rote learning. You know, pull the stick back, the houses get smaller, keep pulling, they get bigger. And that's the extent of it. But they don't really get into, why did those houses get smaller at first and then get bigger later on? And what can you do to make sure that that doesn't happen? You know, we really need to change the way we are teaching our clients.
All right. Now, what about the way we're preparing and managing our flight instructors? I know that one of the most commonly criticized realities of flight instruction today is that it's a stepping stone to building hours to get on to a regional airline. And now that that bar has been set so low that people with less than 300 hours are getting jobs sitting in the right seat of regional airliners, it pretty much guarantees that a student coming in to the door is going to have multiple flight instructors, you know, to get through primary training.
Absolutely. Not only multiple instructors, but quite often no more than 10 hours of solo time. It's incredible that we can have people sitting in the right seat who have only really been in an airplane on their own for 10 hours. That's frightening. I personally feel, and I said this back at this presentation in 2004, I think we need to raise the standards to become a flight instructor. I think 250 hours is nowhere near enough. we have to have many more solo hours. I think that an instrument instructor has to have IMC time logged. It's unbelievable to know that a flight instructor could become an instrument instructor with absolutely no IMC time ever. It's appalling. I also feel that we need to have some kind of an apprenticeship set up, similar to the way they do in Australia, where an initial CFI really is under an apprenticeship with a senior instructor. And that's one of the things that SAFE is looking to do, to create a mentoring program for new instructors, to make sure that they're doing the right job, that they're doing a proper job. You know, in 61, you can get a flight instructor certificate, go hang out your shingle, and be a an independent flight instructor with no one watching over you.
Mm-hmm.
I know I have several brand new instructors working for me in my light sport training center. They've all been trained by me, and although we're Part 61, I still run stage checks to make sure that my instructors are doing a proper job. We don't have that in flight instruction right now, and that's appalling. And these are things that SAFE wants to work towards changing. We really have the credibility, I think, to be able to sit down on the Joint Steering Committee of the FAA and bring forth these issues in a way, in a manner, that the FAA can come along and help affect these changes.
All right. Now you've talked about making some changes that are going to be have significant economic impact on beginning flight instructors. And let me back up and say that one of the criticisms of organizations in general in addressing these things is that many of them seem to have too much inertia. You seem to be moving in a direction, if I understand your last point correctly, that could end up dramatically raising the cost to become a flight instructor. How do you anticipate managing that and getting that through the hoops?
Well, it brings this full circle then, Paul. Yes, it might cost a little more to become a flight instructor. But if you have that quality now, you can certainly charge more. You know, another thing that's really wrong with flight instruction right now is that there are many flight schools that still pay their instructors only when the Hobbs meter is running. This does not give a flight instructor any incentive to spend time on the ground with their client, which is when they're really going to do most of their learning. I know in my flight school, my new instructors are paid $25 an hour. Furthermore, when a client walks in the door, they're told you're going to get anywhere from 15 minutes to 2 hours of ground instruction before you fly, and anywhere from a half an hour to an hour of ground instruction after the flight. And guess what? You're going to pay for this. And mm-hmm. I think that when people see that, they recognize the quality of it. This is flight students, and are not then unwilling to pay that money. But the way flight instruction has been set up to date, the flight instructor is just some schnook who sits in the right seat, only gets paid when the Hobbs meter is running, so all they want to do is keep that Hobbs meter running, and if it's not running, they don't want to spend time with the client. Well, now, if a flight instructor has to spend more money to become better qualified, they can now charge more money for their services.
Well, I guess the other side of that is if there are fewer qualified flight instructors, then market forces will enable them to charge more too, but that might take some time to do. Doug, we're out of time, and I just want to say that I really appreciate your candor and your filling us in on where this is going, at least from SAFE's perspective. And please do keep us up to date. We want to be in touch on a regular basis and see how this goes. And if there's any way that we can help with getting word out on some things that people need to know in the aviation community, Aero News would be glad to be a part of that process.
Well, Paul, we certainly appreciate all the help and the exposure that you folks have given us. And I certainly look forward to continuing this dialogue.
Doug Stewart is the 2004 National CFI of the Year, also the spokesperson for the Society of Aviation and Flight Educators. You can find the group's new website at www.safepilots.org. And you've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at www.aero.net. I'm Paul Flagg. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.